Blog Talk Radio.
Mi chemo apura kanu apura tainut metinde ujira po kwesi ranehm pata aka akwamu maina maruka efiti mu ujira po ujira maen mu. Greetings all apura kani apura tainut people meaning Africans, black people. Today is Amain Sim Day, Affairs of the Nation Day. My name is Ojirafo Kwesi Rodnehm Bata Akan, Ojirafo of the Akwamu Nation in North America within Ojirama, the purified nation, Apurakani, Apurai Kaipit, people in the Western Hemisphere. Yet I say we thank you once again for tuning into the broadcast. This is our first broadcast of our year of 13,019. Of course, in our proper calendar, our year begins on the first day of the Atemet equinox, the fall equinox. This year is September 23rd and so forth. So this is the first segment, our first broadcast of our year 13,019. So on my Sim Affairs of the Nation, we have four broadcasts on a weekly basis. Before we get into this broadcast, we'll just briefly go over the four broadcasts that we have on a weekly basis. We took a hiatus for a few months as we were working on certain projects, which we will get into tonight. So this is why this is the first broadcast of our new year. The four broadcasts that we have on a weekly basis on Joda Monday nights, Akan Fo Nana Som, Ancient Authentic Akan Ancestral Religion. So we deal on that broadcast with Akan Ancestry Religion, specifically, first and foremost, because we are Akan, secondly, because of the misinformation being propagated regarding Akan Ancestry Religion in the United States, but also by individuals in Afuraka, Afuraikaet, Africa of Akan Ancestry, who have been infected with white pseudo-religion, white cultures such as Christianity, Islam, Judaism, Hinduism, Buddhism, and so forth, white culture in general, and therefore their presentation of Akan Ancestry Religion manifests that infection. So we deal with ancient, authentic Akan Ancestry Religion, which deals with our origins in ancient Kana, which is a title of the Khan land, first land, foremost land, which is ancient Nubia. Our people established civilization in ancient Kana, the Khan land. Some of our people migrated north to establish Kemet, so-called Egypt. 2,000 years ago, after the invasions of the White Nile Spring, some of our people migrated from those regions to the western part of the continent of Afuraka, Afuraikaet, Africa, reestablished the Kana Empire in the western part of the continent. This is the Ghana Empire. Centuries later, some of our people migrated further south towards the savannah and forest belt regions to reestablish Akana civilization in those regions, the Akan empires and so forth. Centuries subsequent to that, some of our people were taken from those regions and forced into North, Central, South America, the Caribbean, and Europe during the Musu Okeke, which is the Great Diversity, the enslavement era. And this is how our people ended up in the Western Hemisphere. However, we maintained our ancestral religious practices. Thus, Akan ancestral religion in Suriname in South America is called Winti from the Akan term Quinti. Akan ancestry religion in Guyana in South America is called Kompa from the Akan term Kompo. Akan ancestry religion in Jamaica is called Obia from the Akan term Obai. Akan ancestry religion in North America in the United States is called Hoodoo from the Akan term Undu, meaning medicine for roots, trees, plant life. It also means to become heavy with the spirit through spirit possession, spirit communication. So we deal with ancient, authentic Akan ancestry religion on Joda Monday night. On Benada, Abenada, Tuesday nights, we have Ojira, which means purification. We deal with ancestry religion in general, not just the Akan expression, but ancestry religion in general, wherever Afurakani, Afurakani people, African black people exist in the world. Our various expressions of ancestral religion, including in the Western Hemisphere, and how ancestral religious practice impacts every aspect of our lives. Afurakani, Afurakani, African ancestral religion, in essence, is the ritual incorporation of divine law, the ritual restoration of divine vows. That means through ritual we incorporate those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to incorporate in order to harmonize our thoughts, intentions, and actions with divine order. And through ritual we reject those things, objects, deeds, and entities we need to reject in order to restore balance to our thoughts, intentions, and actions, and thus realign ourselves with divine order. So the ritual incorporation of divine law and the ritual restoration of divine balance, these are the expansive and contractive poles of ancestry religion. We state that Ojida purification operationalizes Nanason. Purification operationalizes our practice of ritually incorporating divine law and ritually restoring divine balance in our lives. Our ancestral culture, the Afuraikani Afuraikani people, is the divine acceptance, the law of the love of order, and the divine hate, rejection, repulsion of disorder and its purveyors. When we engage the ritual practice, we seek to align every thought, intention, and action every moment of every day with divine order. When we make legitimate mistakes, we engage the ritual practice to incorporate divine law and restore divine balance so that we can realign ourselves with divine order and realign our thoughts, intentions, and actions every moment of every day with divine order. That is our ancestral culture. So this is our ancestral religion, impacts every aspect of our lives. That's the broadcast that we deal with on Ojida, been on our Tuesday nights, dealing with the various expressions of ancestral religion, not just on the continent of Afuraika, Afuraika in Africa, but how our people manifested and maintained our ancestral religious practices in our blood circles in the West, such as Hoodoo, the Akan ancestral religion in North America, Juju, which is Yoruba ancestral religion in North America, Voodoo, which is Ebe and Thon ancestral religion in North America, Wanga, which is Ozambo ancestral religion in North America, Ngengan, which is Fang ancestral religion in North America, Grigri, which is Bambara ancestral religion in North America, and more. On our Wednesday night broadcast, on our Wukuda Akoda Wednesday night, we have Egua Marketplace, where we showcase Afuraikani, Afuraikani businesses, organizations, and institutions, those who are serving the Afuraikani, Afuraikani community in a positive capacity, those who maintain their ancestral religious values in the context of their service to the community. So when you look at our page and you see the various businesses we have interviewed, people come on to the show, showcase their businesses, organizations, and institutions, and we also deal with the philosophical foundation of economic development based on our publication, OCOM, Economic Development Model, where we approach economic development rooted in our ancestral religious values. Therefore, it is a holistic approach to economic development, which is a key component of nation building, of Amai Nsesu nation building restoration. The night is Yauda, also called Yada Abada Thursday night, and we have Amai Nsesu. Affairs of the nation. We deal with issues that confront us as an Omain, as a nation, but specifically as Ojiramai, the purified nation, Afuraikani, Afuraikani people, African black people in the Western Hemisphere. Ojiramai is our designation for our people in the West, those who were forced into the Western Hemisphere as a result of the Mutsuo Kesi, the great perversity, the enslavement era. However, we maintained our ancestral religious values and practices when we were forced into the Western Hemisphere and empowered and guided by our ancestresses and ancestors. We waged war against the whites and their offspring incessantly and forced the end of enslavement in the Western Hemisphere. When we were forced into this region, at some point, we were directed by our Nsamanfo, our Nananon Nsamanfo, our spiritually cultivated ancestresses and ancestors, and the Abosom, the forces in nature connected to our blood circles, to coalesce in the specific region of the Earth Mother's body in this region, of her body in the West, to blend ancestral blood circles in this region in the West. We learned to interface with the unique expression of the Abosom, of the Orisha, of the Vodou, of the Ntoru, Ntoru to the divinities as they manifest in this region of the West. And because of that confluence of the activities, we also dealt with the plant life, animal life, mineral life in this region of the Western Hemisphere. But because of that confluence of activity, that blending of blood circles under the direction of our Nananon Nsamafo bringing ancestresses and ancestors back through those blended blood circles, dealing with the unique expression of the forces of nature in this region and incorporating that into our families, our communities, our spirit bodies, and so forth, we forged a locative identity, a unique expression of Afurakani Afurakaiti culture and people as a result of that blending of ancestral blood circles in this region of the Earth Mother's body in the West. Therefore, we are Ujira Mind, the purified nation, Afurakani Afurakaiti people in the Western Hemisphere. We have our own unique expression of culture. We have our own unique expression of ancestral religious practice. We are not dependent on anyone outside of our direct ancestral blood circles for our ancestral religious practice or culture. So we deal with Amaniye, which is nationism, which we call the purification of nationalism. It's an approach to development, approach to nation building, rooted in our ancestral religious values. When we talk about nation building, we cannot deal with nation building from the foundation, a philosophical or pseudo-philosophical foundation of Judeo-Christian nonsense or socialism or atheism or some other foolish concepts put forward by the white male spring. We are rooted in our ancestral religious values, and that informs our practice of nation building. That's the difference between Amaniye nationism, Afurakani, Afurakaiti, African black nationism, which is the purification of nationalism. So this is what we deal with on Amainsem Affairs of the Nation. So tonight we want to get into, and first we're going to try to launch the chat room. There was an issue of the chat room opening up, so we'll see if it opens up. And we just had to reboot a couple of times, but it wasn't opening up. But even before we get into that, as that's opening up, we want to talk about a couple of different things that have been taking place. We said we took a hiatus for a number of months. The last time we broadcast, we mentioned to the community that we were in the midst of completing our first documentary film, Amarukako Adebisa, African-American Ancestral Divination. Since that time, we have completed the film, and we have released the film. And we have begun screening the film in various cities across the country. When you look on our webpage, you'll see that we have a number of cities listed. We've already visited, showcased the film, or screened the film in Washington, D.C., Philadelphia, Atlanta, Hartford, Connecticut. We'll be in Toronto, Canada next weekend. We have New Orleans coming up. We have Florida. We have Texas. We have California, New York, New Jersey, North Carolina, South Carolina, Michigan, Chicago, a number of different places. As we are filling out the list and confirming dates, we put some information forward. When you look on our website, you'll see, and also on our Facebook page, we put some information forward about how you can bring this film to your city. We have a number of cities, over 40 cities listed, that we will be showcasing the film in this country and also outside of the country. The way we make decisions about what city we will go to next is based on the support. So, for example, there are certain cities, of course, we are already scheduled and laid out to visit, but for those who come forward, you can purchase your tickets ahead of time. We've laid that out. When you go to the website, fujirafo.com/amarukako_adebisa.html, when you go to the website, you'll see that you can purchase tickets ahead of time. You can pre-order your tickets. All tickets are pre-ordered. We're not selling tickets at the door. Just like, for example, in Hartford, Connecticut a couple of weeks ago, we had basically a packed house. Everybody purchased the tickets ahead of time. And this is how we're doing it. So, and this is one of the ways that we can make sure that nobody is turned away at the door. Once we fill all of the seats ahead of time, then we can let people know that, you know, the venue is full, so they don't come out to try to see a film and they get turned away. So, and it's much more efficient this way. So we put the information out. You pre-order tickets. When we see a number of people who have purchased tickets in, say, for example, Houston or Dallas, or certain other places, then we can make the decision to go to that city next. So if you would like to bring this to your city, you can email us, quakeyicon@gmail.com. You can go to our Facebook page, Quake the Icon on Facebook. Go to our regular website, ogdoppo.com. You can send us a message if you would like to host a screening. But even if you're not talking about hosting a screening, if you would simply like us to come to your region, inform some individuals, purchase your tickets ahead of time. Tickets are $15 each. We do have discounts for multiple ticket orders. For example, 3 tickets instead of $45 is $40. 5 tickets instead of $75 or $15 each is $60 for 5 tickets. 10 tickets instead of $150, which would be $15 each. 10 tickets are $100, which drops the price to $10 each. So we have these discounts on tickets, so that way people can order tickets, multiple tickets. We see 10 or 15 or 20 people order some tickets in a specific city. We can make that decision to go to that city. That'll help us cover the cost of the venue. That's another reason for us to do pre-order tickets up front, because then we can cover the expense of renting out the venue for 4 hours. Because the movie is 2 hours and 17 minutes, and then we have a question and answer session, panel discussion with myself and one or more of the other sisters who are in the film. So you can go to our website for that. The film itself, for those who are not, who are unaware, Amarukako Adivisa, African-American Ancestral Divination. We're dealing with the specific forms of divination we've maintained in our blood circles here in the Western Hemisphere in the United States after the Musu Okeke, the Great Perversity, the enslavement era. We were forced here, as we said. We maintained our ancestral religious values. We were directed through our divination systems on the best means by which to wage war against the whites and their offspring, massacre them, and force the end of enslavement. We use our ancestral religious practices for healing, but also for killing our enemies, whether it's chemical and biological warfare through root work, poisoning food, poisoning the drinks and so forth in the so-called slave master's house, routing them and then freeing ourselves from the plantations and the rest of our people, or fashioning metal armaments and so forth and waging war in that fashion. Our ancestral religious practices of divination maintained in Hoodoo, the Akan ancestral religion, Juju, Yoruba ancestral religion, Voodoo, Ebe and Bone ancestral religion, Wanga, Ovambo ancestral religion, which is part of the Gullah constellation, as well as Ngengai, which is Fong ancestral religion. These are the traditions that we showcase in the film. It is featuring Voodoo Queen Galinda Laveau out of New Orleans, Wabet Seshat Toot Ankwajet, who is out of Florida. We also have Mama Mawusi Ashakir, who is out of Cincinnati, Ohio, and Rechit Kajara Niyaya Nebehet, who is out of Atlanta, as well as myself. All 5 of us are featured in the film talking about our specific forms of divination from our different traditions. So you can see the trailer on the website. You can check that out, and then you can order your tickets. We also have the pre-ordered price for the DVD. The DVD will be coming out this winter, coming out soon and so forth. The pre-ordered price is $15, so you can order the DVD. Once it's released, the retail price will be slightly higher. But right now, the pre-order price is $15. And again, we have the discounts. If you order 3 DVDs, the discounted price, you order 5, 10, and so forth. People order DVDs for not only themselves, but also as gifts, birthday gifts. Also, if they have people they are working with, whether it's students or clients or wherever they are in schools, at the workplace, and so forth. This is it's education. It's a way to educate people. If you're a teacher, if you're a social worker, therapist, different forms, different occupations that people have where they're in front of people, teaching people, or just sharing the information with people who you know typically don't confront this kind of information. So all of that information is on our site, on the Amarukako Adebisa page on our website. We have the event coming up in Toronto, Canada on December 8th. We still have some tickets left available some seats left available in that venue. It's only a week away, but we have a few seats left. So if you would like to attend, go to the website, order your tickets now. Once we reach the limit, then, you know, we will have to close sales as far as the tickets. So if you want to attend in Toronto, Canada on September or December 8th, go to the website now and purchase your tickets there. If you have any questions, of course, simply email us. Now, part of this process of dealing with Amanye nationism, the purification of nationalism, when we're talking about divination directly impacting our nationism, when you learn from the forces in nature how you are to operate, first of all, we come into a region of the Earth Mother that we're unfamiliar with. That means there's plant life, animal life, mineral life that we're unfamiliar with. If we escape from plantations or even after enslavement is over, we migrate away and establish independent settlements. We have to establish methods of food production and preservation, learn how to cultivate these crops in this land. Not only new crops we've never confronted before, but even the ones that we were accustomed to, like rice and so forth, we still need to learn how to cultivate these crops in a region where we have weather patterns that we're not accustomed to. Winter was something we were not accustomed to. We had to learn how to live in harmony with the Earth Mother in the region that we found ourselves. We had to learn how to deal with the plant life and mineral life and animal life, inclusive of plant medicine and minerals, medicine from minerals and even medicine from animals and so forth. We had to learn how to harmonize with this region of the Earth Mother in all its aspects so that we can live and thrive and develop ourselves and defend ourselves and secure ourselves. Ancestry religion allowed us to do that. Divination allowed us to do that. Learning what plants are poisonous, what plants are okay for us to use, what animals we can work with, which ones are very dangerous, how to deal with them and so forth, what mineral life is good for medicine, for poison, to poison our enemies and so forth. Everything that we needed, we learned through that divinatory process, divinatory practice, and we passed that down intergenerationally, transcarnationally to our descendants. That's how our ancestry religion impacts our notion of nation building, develop food production and preservation, the first principal value of nation building, methods of curing disease, the second principal value of nation building, establishing a military structure. We're defending ourselves not only with metal armaments, but also with chemical and biological warfare and root work, conjure. It's the means by which we establish the precedent for chemical and biological warfare in the Western Hemisphere, establishing institutions, training institutions for agriculture, training institutions for military structure, training institutions for medicine, training institutions for engineering and so forth. We're establishing institutions as the fourth principal value of Amainsestua nation building that is also informed by divination, also informed by our ancestry religious practice. How is the notion of nation or institution building informed by our ancestry religious practice? Because when we're looking into the different fields of endeavor, different activities that people will be engaged in, occupational areas that people will be engaged in. When you learn through divination what Abosom, what Orisha, what Vodou, what divinity governs your head, what kind of natural inclinations you have. If you're a child of the deity of agriculture, then you'll be naturally inclined towards agricultural science. If you're a child of a divinity that governs fire and warfare and so forth, you'll be naturally inclined towards defense and a military structure. If you're naturally inclined towards the divinity that deals with fashioning like the divinity Ptah and so forth, you'll be naturally inclined towards engineering. If you're dealing with other divinities, you'll be naturally inclined towards textiles, naturally inclined towards medicine, naturally inclined towards the forces of nature that govern these different aspects of creation. So when we attune to who we are spiritually, find out what those natural inclinations are, then we're moved into the specific area of nation building, restoration that we naturally fit into. That's how ancestry religion informs properly our nation-building restoration process. And that, of includes the fifth principal value of nation building, which is establishing sound systems of governance and jurisprudence. That sixth principal value, the building of homes on acquired land. That seventh principal value is manufacturing of clothing, dealing with textiles and so forth. So these seven principal values of nation building, restoration, as we call it, Amain Sesu, are informed by our ancestral religious practice. Ancestral divination is directly related to that. We lived that. We proved that. That is part of our ancestral heritage. This is the information that's not taught. Our people are taught that we became Christians and all this other nonsense when the majority of our people did not fall into that until over a century later. Beginning in the early 20s and into the so-called 1900s, that's when our people started falling into Christianity heavily. But prior to that, we were practicing our ancestral religious traditions. We were establishing independent black towns, hundreds of them, living intergenerationally in our own independent black towns and so forth. This is what we were engaged in. Even prior to that process, before the end of enslavement, our people were establishing maroon settlements, independent settlements, sovereign nation settlements, after we had escaped from enslavement, freed ourselves from enslavement, and established independent nations. One of them that's very popular is Dismal Swamp in Virginia and North Carolina, where over 2,000 of our people dwell, intergenerationally escaped into that region during enslavement, established an independent nation, established a military and so forth, and our people continued in that process. Before we go forward, I just want to make sure if there's an issue with hearing, we want to make sure, send us a message if there's any issue. And right now we're going to try to open up this chat room once again to see if it's working. It looks like it's opening up right now. Okay, so the chat room is open now. So if you'd like to interact in the chat room, you can go into the chat room now, and if there's an issue with being able to hear, or if you have any issues, let us know in the chat room. As a matter of fact, if you're on the phone line, if you can hear clearly, if you can just hit the number one right quick so we can make sure that everyone can hear clearly. Anybody on the phone line, just hit the number one so we can see that your hand is raised. Okay, so we just wanted to make sure that was proper. But now the chat room is open, so you can interact in the chat room. Okay, so as part of that process, we talked about how Dismal Swamp is one of those independent maroon settlements. We also find in Florida, amongst the Gullah people, which the White Narrow Spring misnomer, the Seminoles and so forth, the black Seminoles. The term Seminole is a corruption of Cimarron. Cimarron is where you get the term maroon from, so there's no such thing as a Seminole tribe. That doesn't even exist. That's just a corruption of a Spanish word, Cimarron. But the Gullah people, Gullah and Geechee people, were establishing an independent nation in Florida, waging war against the United States Army, who were never able to drag our people back into enslavement. That was a large independent sovereign nation in the region of Florida. They waged the largest war against the United States Army in the trusery of the country. And we address that in the film as well. But then we have other settlements as well that are less known. One of the maroon settlements that are less known that we want to focus on is directly related to our Hapi Merit retreat. So we have our Hapi Merit hibernation training, cultural, and ritual retreat, which is coming up in February. It's our second annual retreat. Our focus is Oberima and Obaatan, Apuraikani manhood and Apuraikani womanhood training, cultural, and ritual retreat. So when you look at our Hapi Merit page, you see the deity Hapi, the male divinity of the inundation of the Nile River, Merit, the female divinity of the inundation of the Nile River, And the reason for this retreat is directly related to Amaniye nationism, the purification of nationalism, and so forth. If you look on the page, you'll see we say that our annual retreat is a training retreat for those who will become facilitators of Obedima and Obaatan training in their community. Obedima, Afurakani African manhood, and Obaatan, Afurakani African womanhood trainings are designed to be conducted in 7 one-hour sessions for 7 weeks based upon the 7 chapters of each book. So we have the book Obedima, Afurakani Manhood, the book Obaatan, Afurakani Womanhood. We utilize these books, and of course, these two, as well as all of our 31 books, are free downloads from our website, but we utilize these books to train our people, young as well as adult, into manhood and womanhood from a firm foundation. This is why we say these books and related trainings are a philosophical basis for rites of passage for youth and adults. The restoration of Afurakani manhood and Afuraikaiti womanhood rooted in our ancestral religious values is key to the restoration of Ogirama'i, the purified nation, Afurakanu, Afuraikaiti Africans in the Western Hemisphere. This is a foundational element of Amaniye nationism, the purification of nationalism, for grounded Afurakani, Afurakaiti African black men and women. When we are grounded, we form strong marriages, we raise strong children, and build strong families, which is the cornerstone of Afurakani, Afurakaiti nationhood. All Afurakanu, Afurakaiti Africans, black people, must be grounded in these principles of manhood and womanhood, Obedima, Obaatan, rooted in our ancestral religious values, not a notion of manhood and womanhood coming from pseudo-religious practices like Judeo-Christian, Islamic, and other pseudo-religious practices, but rooted in our ancestral religious values. What is our spiritual identity? What divinities govern our head? What divinities govern our matric clans and patric clans? Who are our ancestresses and ancestors, and how do they impact our personalities, our identity, and how we interface with one another? We call the retreat Hapi and Merit, after the divinities, the male and female deities, Hapi and Merit, and it's in February, number one, first and foremost. February is the time of Hapi and Merit. They are the Abosom, the deities of the inundation of the river, but they are also, of course, the river of Kemet, the longest river in the world, the so-called Nile River. Hapi and Merit are the male and female forces animating that river. But the river of blood in your body is governed by Hapi and Merit as well. And the river of energy that dispenses energy throughout your body, following the physical river of blood that's within your body, is governed by Hapi and Merit as well. February in the actual astronomical quote-unquote zodiac is the beginning of Hapi and Merit, which is misnomered as Aquarius, the water bearer, but Aquarius pouring the water into the river is a corruption of the male divinity Hapi, the Nile divinity who is pouring water from his vase or vases into the river to cause it to inundate or swell. And the same is true of Merit, the female divinity. And you have Hapi of the south and Hapi of the north, just as you have Merit of the south and Merit of the north, twin divinities in the north and south. So February is actually the beginning of their period. It's a cycle for the purified nation to become the hibernation. This is why we call it a hibernation retreat, for hibernation and rejuvenation in preparation for the abundance that will manifest in the Tefel Bere, which is the beautiful time of the spring, called Tefel Bere in the Akan tradition. So at the retreat, it's February 16th, that weekend, that is actually a 3-day weekend for most people because it's the so-called President's Day weekend. It's a 3-day weekend. We have our retreat on Edisto Island, one of the Gullah Islands of South Carolina. So we have separate sessions for Obedima, Afurakani manhood, based on the book. I will be conducting that session with the brothers. Obaatan, Afurakaiti womanhood, based on the book of the same name. That session will be conducted by our sister Ama Atsenye. So she'll be conducting that session with the sisters. Those are the separate sessions, but then we also have joint sessions for Patas Dasa Tim, as well as Hapi Merit. We also have ritual when we go to the ocean and so forth, Eto Abena, Bosom Po, the female or male divinity of the ocean and so forth, to engage in ancestral ritual. We will also be visiting a settlement of our people who established Maroon settlements in and on Edisto Island. We also have vegan food and so forth and a number of different things. But let's get into that notion of the truestery dealing with Edisto Island. Posted some information on our Facebook page recently, some information that was not widely known with regard to the truestery of Edisto Island. We want to read some of that information quickly. So hold on 1 second. Just want to pull this information up. So we showed an image. This is one of the pieces that we showed. An image from Edisto Island and some truestery with regard to the Maroon settlements on Edisto Island. One of the reasons we're drawn to that particular region to have this Hapi Merit retreat around that time of the year to go into hibernation and rejuvenation so we can come forward and build our community, establishing our youth as well as adults in Oberima Afurakani manhood and Obasain Afurakani womanhood from a firm foundation rooted in our ancestral religious values. So there's an image that we show from so-called 1862. And it says, Edisto Island during the American Civil War was the location of a number of minor engagements, and for a time, a large colony of quote-unquote African-American Afurakani Afurakani escaped former enslaved individuals during the American Civil War. Edisto Island was largely abandoned by planters also in November in so-called 1861, and in December, escaped enslaved Afurakani people who escaped began setting up their own refugee camps there. 1862, armed African Americans from the island and Confederate forces clashed, and a Confederate raid in reprisal killed a small number of unarmed African Americans. So we established independent Maroon settlements on Edisto Island. We established a military structure to the point where we had a battle with the Confederate forces. Then eventually in February, Union forces were stationed on the island and so forth, and they talk about some of that. There's another piece that we want to pull up real quick with regard to that. Just give me a second. We have the link, but we need to pull it back up. If you have any questions or comments, you can post them in the chat room. You can also hit the number 1 on the phone line if you have any questions or comments. Okay, so there's a publication called Edisto Island, 1861 to 2006, Ruin, Recovery, and Rebirth. You can see this on Google Books. There's a specific section where they briefly touch and kind of summarize in a certain aspect of the truestery. But, of course, we have more in-depth insight into what's actually taking place. The section is called The Black Republic of Edisto Island. It says the African Americans left behind on Edisto and neighboring islands became, for all practical purposes, freed men and women as soon as their owners departed in November of 1861. But, of course, many of our people who had escaped from enslavement and established ourselves there, along with the what they call a trickle of runaway slaves. In this book, they call them contrabands. And during that time on Edisto Island, just like people were called Maroons in other places, the whites in our spring in that region called our people who escaped from enslavement and were free, they called them contrabands. So those contrabands or Maroons crossed Union lines at Hampton Roads, Virginia and Washington, D.C. in 1861. These Sea Islanders were among the very first freed people of the war. Edisto Island suddenly was a military no man's land in which no one was in charge. No Union troops showed up in November, December, or January for 3 months. Edisto Island was a black republic. In the absence of a written record, one can only guess what life was really like and what the people were thinking during that winter of 1861-62. There are a few clues. First, one has to assume that the people left behind during the white evacuation, inclusive of those who escaped to that region and established themselves in 1861, really wanted to stay behind. Since the so-called slave owners were under military orders to remove their slaves, any slaves who openly resisted or ran away and were caught were being executed without a trial. But it takes no stretch of the imagination to hear the word passing quickly from plantation to plantation, encouraging all who could to lie low or hide until all the whites left. So some people waited, white people began to evacuate the island, but some of our people were coming to the island in waves because they were escaping enslavement from other areas. The next question they ask is, how many African Americans stayed on Edisto after the white evacuation? A Confederate estimate in January 1862 was about 1,000. The numbers increased during the winter as word spread to the mainland and runaways from areas still under Confederate control crossed the rivers at night for safe haven. By April of 1862, the black population apparently had doubled and continued to grow. So over 2,000 of our people on Edisto Island, it was a, for all intents and purposes, a free black republic at that time, during the Civil War, but they were free on that island, established themselves, and so forth. An eyewitness account by Thomas Black proves that when the whites left Edisto, all the whites left. Thomas Black was a poor white man, a carpenter born in Maine, who owned no slaves but lived with his family on Edisto Island. After the war, he swore that by December 1861, he was the only white man left on the island, and he wanted to stay. But he remained there at the peril of his life. He was repeatedly threatened with violence by the quote-unquote Negroes and was at last forcibly ejected from the island by them. He was threatened to be hung and was at last taken on board of the federal gunboat Penguin as a prisoner and put in irons. It was not only unsafe, but impossible for any white to remain on the island and get off alive. This is a quote from that particular time. So we had established ourselves. There were over 2,000 of us who were living on that island. All the whites had left, and even those who wanted to stay were forced out and so forth. So we had our independent settlement. Next, the text says, taking Black's account at face value, despite his protest that he was pro-union, it is clear that African Americans did not trust him. They arrested him and nearly lynched him. In the uncertain military situation that first winter, one white man wandering around loose with information about their numbers, their leaders, and their hiding places was apparently one risk too many. So we didn't trust any of the whites in their offspring. He was almost lynched by our people until he was taken as a prisoner in irons on a Union boat and taken away. The African-American people of Edisto Island probably lived fairly well that first winter. Most had kitchen gardens and small livestock, and they apparently found enough bulk provisions, corn and potatoes left behind on some plantations to feed themselves amply during the winter. They were also accustomed to harvesting seafood in the creeks and rivers year-round. Firewood was available everywhere for the cut. Some families may have moved out of their cramped, drafty plank cabins into the spacious, well-furnished, and comfortably heated houses abandoned by their former owners. All in all, the Black Republic of Edisto, though short-lived, pulled most of its people safely through the winter and into the springtime of federal occupation. So what we're dealing with in that section is we have Edisto Island being basically a black republic for a number of months. We forced all of the remaining whites off of the island. We were living independently, self-sufficient, and so forth. And this lasted for a while, and then federal troops came, the Union troops came, and then that island became a battleground between the Union forces and the Civil War. In the neighboring area, the Combahee River, that Combahee River raid that happened in like 1862-1863, that Combahee River raid was very important because it was led, the Union forces were led by Nana Abena Araminta, which is Harriet Tubman. That was the first time Union forces were led by a woman. Our great ancestress, Nana Abena Araminta, Harriet Tubman, who was an Akan ancestress, by the way, she was Asante. Ashanti is Asante. She led that regiment because she knew the ins and outs of the area, and they freed over 700 enslaved Afro-Akani people under her leadership. It was a military campaign, armed military campaign to free our people. So Edito Island became a battleground during the Civil War. And thousands of our people joined both sides of the Civil War because from our perspective, our people were simply being armed. And once they were able to be armed, they would kill as many crackers as they possibly could, even if they were on the same side. They just wanted to get armed to slaughter as many whites as they possibly could. If they were part of the Confederate forces and fighting against the Union forces and saw black Union soldiers, they're not killing the Union soldiers. They would give them a pass and kill anything white moving. When our people joined by the thousands, the so-called Civil War, that's the reason slavery ended, because we joined the Civil War. We were fighting for our own independence. Some of our people had already escaped from enslavement, established independent maroon settlements, sovereign nations, and so forth. Some of our people joined that Civil War peace because without that, it wouldn't have turned out the way it did. So we were fighting for our own independence, and we led that movement. After the Gullah Wars against the United States Army, which forced the Civil War to come into being, then our people joined that and forced the end of enslavement. It was consistent, incessant waging of war for centuries in this country by our people, guided by ancestral religious practices, inclusive of divination. This is the reason that we're drawn to Edisto, to have this Hati Meri, this hibernation retreat, training, cultural, and ritual retreat. So not only will we have our training during that weekend, the joint trainings as well as the one set of concurrent trainings for manhood and womanhood headed up by myself and Sister Ama, but we will also be going, engaging in ancestral ritual at these sacred spaces where our ancestresses and ancestors once walked, where they live, where they established their own independent settlements, and where they transitioned, and where their bones are still buried. This is where we will be. In that regard, we have typically, just as we did last year, we only were registering between 20 and 25 people. The same thing true with this year, a small group so that we can focus and go in-depth in the information. So once we emerge from that training, we're fully grounded in Oberima, Afro-Akani manhood, Afro-Akani womanhood, Obatine, as well as Hapi and Merit and their function in creation and their function within our community as an Afro-Akani, Afro-Akani online, these two divinities that we're going to get into. So we have a smaller number because it's more workable in that fashion. Right now, we have about 7 spaces left. We're only registering 20-plus people. We have about 7 spaces left for registration. Once those 7 spaces are taken, then we will be closing registration. We should be closing registration by tomorrow because a couple of people said because tomorrow is payday, they will be able to register tomorrow. So those 7 spaces tomorrow, December 30th. But it just depends. So if you would like to register for the retreat, we have 7 spaces left. the registration. We have a payment option, installment option for the registration fee. You can put a deposit of $50 down, or you can put a deposit of $100 down and have the installment payments to cover the rest. The fee is only $200. That includes all of the trainings, all of the books that come with the trainings, all of the vegan meals throughout the weekend, the tour and everything else. So, but you can put down $50 for a deposit and pay the rest of the $150 and $50 installments, or you can put down $100 for a deposit and pay the other $100 installments, or some people just simply, pay for the $200 up front. That is up to you. All of the options are on the website. I'll put the link in the chat room so that people can see that. But it's ogirapo.com, Happy Merit. We'll put that in the chat room right now. And as we're doing that, if you have any questions or comments in the chat room and you'd like to, you can make those now. If you have any questions or comments on the phone line, simply hit the number one so people can see that your hand is raised. So that we just place that in the chat room. And before we go to the phone line real quickly, with the notion of Hapi and Merit. Hapi is the male divinity, and there's a Hapi of the south and Hapi of the north. Twin divinities, male divinities of the inundation of the river. Merit is the female divinity, Merit of the south, and Merit of the north. Merit Shema is Merit of the south, Merit Met is Merit of the north, twin divinities of the inundation of the river. We've done some broadcasts dealing with these divinities, but it's not just the spiritual forces, expansive and contractive, that animate the river Nayar or Nile in Kemet. They govern the river of energy within our bodies. Physiologically, they govern the river of blood, rivers of blood within our bodies. The arteries are governed by Hapi. The veins are governed by Merit. And then the river of energy that matches and mirrors the physical rivers of blood within our bodies that distributes energy throughout our spirit body, just as the arteries and veins distribute blood and collect blood throughout our physical body, the same is with the rivers of energy within the spirit body. They govern the rivers of energy within the great divine body of the supreme being, Amenet and Amen, or Inyamewa, Inyame, or Mawu and Lisa, Olokun and Olorun, and so forth. But they govern the rivers of energy that's distributed throughout the great divine body of creation. Our bodies as Apurakani men and Apurakani women only. Our bodies are a reflection, a microcosm of the macrocosm, so our physical bodies reflect that. We have rivers of blood that are distributing nutrients, but also energy, oxygen, and so forth throughout our physical body. We may have vital organs such as the brain, the heart, the lungs, the liver, and so forth, but none of those organs are functional if the rivers of blood are not functional. Every organ, every gland, every system is dependent upon Hapi and Merit working properly. None of your organs, glands, or systems can work properly if your arteries and veins are not constantly circulating blood throughout your system and carrying those nutrients throughout your system and that oxygen, as well as purifying, you know, the deoxygenated blood and so forth. If that's not happening, then the cells and the organs and glands are not being fed properly and you suffer. The same is true with the river of energy moving throughout the spirit body. If there are blockages within the blood vessels, then you have high blood pressure or you have various forms of disease. If there are blockages within the energy system, then you have manifestations of disease, mental instability, emotional instability, the lack of capacity to be receptive to the abosom, the forces of nature receptive to the ancestors and ancestors for proper guidance and development and rejuvenation energy-wise, so you're not able to execute your function in creation, and therefore you run into numerous obstacles because the decisions you're making are not harmonious, you're not able to generate the kind of power, energy you need to overcome these obstacles. So if there's a blockage in the arteries and veins, there's disease that manifests in the physical body. If there are blockages in the energy system, the river of energy and veins within the spirit body, then there's a breakdown spiritually, and there's spiritual discordance, and it manifests individually, but also manifests in your relationships, manifests in our community. We can see that there are various blockages, emotional, mental, intellectual, behavioral, within our community. These various blockages can only be taken care of when we deal with the forces of nature that govern us, but Hapi and Meri are central. The same is true with the communal body of Apurakani Afrakani people. We're connected just like the various cells in the body are connected. Just like organs have cells, which are children of the organs, they're all part of that organal structure that is community, that is a nation for those cells. The liver cells belong to the river nation. If there are blockages in the blood flow, then those cells are going to suffer, and that organ or that nation, that entity is going to suffer. We recognize a nation and Oman is a living, breathing entity, just like an organ is a living, breathing entity. When the cells are functioning harmoniously, the organ is operating harmoniously. When the cells are suffering, then the organ is depleted as well. So when you don't have the proper flow of blood to the organs and glands and so forth, then the organ and glands suffer, the whole body suffers because the organ and glands are suffering, and the cells, of course, suffer as well. The same is true of the energetic body of the community. If there's a disruption or blockage in the flow of energy circulating through our community, the divine living energy of Ra and Ra, creator and creatress, that circulates through our bodies, through plant life, animal life, mineral life, and Apurakani, Apurakani, human life, if there are blockages within that divine living energy, then we're not able to connect properly, energetically, with the forces of nature. We're not able to be informed and operate based on wisdom. We're not able to connect consciously with the forces of nature that govern all aspects of creation, so then we're not able to have insight into how the different aspects of creation are offered. If you have insight into the ocean, rivers, earth mother, plant life, animal life, mineral life, because you simply can attune to the forces in creation that animate them just instinctively, just like animals do. We're in our natural state. We can instinctively align ourselves, our thoughts, intentions, and actions with nature. But we also can gain insight into nature. So therefore, when we engage in the ritual practice, we can link our energetic body with the energetic body of plant life or mineral life. Then we can learn of its properties, and we can learn how to extract that plant life for specific medicines and learn how to prepare them for specific disease states. We can learn how to take those minerals and mix them in a certain fashion to overcome disease states. We can learn what plant life, animal life, and so forth, mineral life, certain things can be used for production, for building, what kinds of stones and what kinds of other materials can be used for engineering practices and so forth. A number of different things. We have insight into specific aspects of nature, and therefore we have a consciousness where we can draw information that we can use for our benefit. If our energy is flowing properly, just like if the blood is flowing properly, if the energy is blocked because of foolish ideas, depression, stress, self-destructive activity, conditionings and so forth, trauma, we haven't broken through that, the blockages in energy manifest. Just like, you know, water being clogged up in a pipe and it eventually bursts, or the blood being clogged up because there's plaque in the vessels, and therefore there's high blood pressure and so forth, which leads to disease. So you have a blockage of energy, you're not able to link your energy optimally with the energy of plant life, animal life, mineral life, that ancestors and ancestors, the abosom, the divinity, and therefore you're not able to attune consciously into what aspects of creation they govern, and therefore we can't make the kind of proper decisions that we came into the world to make. The flow of energy is key. Every divinity is dependent on the proper functioning of Hapi and Meri. Our bodies are dependent on the proper functioning of Hapi and Meri within the blood, arteries and veins, as well as within the energetic body. This is why we focus on them at this particular time of the year. Some of our people who read texts from ancient Kemet or study certain things, they may read texts the same way white Egyptologists read texts and then take their mindset. So white Egyptologists feel like Hapi and Meri are not important. They may focus more so on Ra, quote-unquote, calling Ra the sun god, which he is not, or focusing on Amen, and not focusing on Amenet, not focusing on Ra'et. They may focus on Ma'at, and not focus on the male deity Ma'at. They may focus on Asar and Aset, Set and Nebuchadnezzar and Heru and so forth, but various other divinities. They say, well, all those were minor divinities, and they don't pay much attention to them. And then we take on that mindset, even though we'll say we're Afrocentric, and we have an Afrocentric approach to studying ancient Kemet and so forth, and we blacken up some of the information that the white Egyptologists put forward. If we still have that mindset, we'll subordinate many of the feminine forces in creation, many of the female divinities. If you look at our work going back over 20-plus years, we focus on the Great Mother and Great Father, the Creator and the Creatress, the Ancestresses and the Ancestors, the Goddesses and the Gods in balance. We've been talking about Ma'at and Ma'at for over 20 years. We've been talking about Amen and Amenet, Ra and Ra'et, Ka and Ka'et, Hehu and Hehud, and so forth, the balance of male and female and so forth. Well, the whites and offspring don't focus on that. But then they also do not focus on major divinities, but they call them minor because they don't know much about them or they weren't as popular as far as what they read in certain texts or what the Greeks had to say about them later. So they'll just relegate central divinities to creation and all of our lives to a minor divinity who didn't play a large role in the cosmos. And then our people will repeat that nonsense, even if they're so-called priests, priestesses, healers, healeresses, so-called elders and eldresses, misinforming our people by omission or just not understanding. Even if we're involved in ancestral religious practices manifest in, you know, through people being connected to Nigeria or Ghana or Senegal or South Africa, or the Gambia or wherever we're, Mali and so forth, we're imitating contemporary expressions of the culture by those who are practicing the culture now. However, that's not a legitimate practice for us. When we left Afurakai, we left Africa hundreds of years ago, the manner in which we were practicing ancestral religion at that time, 300 years ago, was fossilized in our bones and blood. And it is that culture that we pass down intergenerationally and transcarnationally to our descendants. This is the culture we receive. The way our Khan ancestral religion was practiced in the so-called 1700s when many of us were forced over here, that was time-stamped within us, fossilized within us. It is that pristine expression of the culture that we passed down here. Whatever happened on the continent since we left those regions, which are now Ghana and Nigeria and Togo and Benin and Senegal and Gambia and Cameroon and so forth, whatever happened over the past few hundred years since we have been gone, we had nothing to do with that. But the culture that we brought over here was that pristine culture, and we passed it down in the form of Hutu, which is Akan, Juju, which is Yoruba, Wanga, which is Obambo, Voodoo, which is Evanfon, Ngengai, which is Fon, Grigri, which is Bambara, and so forth, and we passed down that culture. That is the culture born of our ancestral blood circles, our spirit genetic blood circles. That expression of ancestral religion is the only legitimate expression that we can practice. We can interact with other individuals on the continent and outside of our blood circles, but the ancestral religious practice that is born of our blood circles and also how it was refined as we interface with this region of the Earth Mother, interface with her, both Earth Mother divinities in this region of their body, the way we interface with the divinities, the Abosom, the Orisha, the Vodou in this region of the Earth Mother, the plant life, animal life, mineral life. We have to incorporate all of that into our system, into our physical bodies as we consume the plant life, animal life, and mineral life from this region, which transforms ourselves. The manner in which the deities possess us in this region, their unique expression of energy transforms the way we operate in a unique expression. So we have our own expression, and that is key. That is inclusive of the divinities Hapi and Meri and how they manifest in the various cultures, whether it's Yoruba, Akan, Congo, whatever it is, they manifest within their own names in every culture. Because, of course, these are major forces in creation. Everybody has a name for them, just like everybody has a name for blood vessels, you know, arteries and veins. And the energetic rivers of force and power within the spirit body, every group has a name for that. Hapi and Merit, which is key. They are central to our functioning. They are central to development. They are central to Amani'e nation building. Even in ancient Kemet, the river was the lifeline of the people. Hapi and Merit were the lifeline of the people. When you look at the river of blood and, you know, veins in your body, all the different organs and glands are feeding off of that river, that central river, moving up and down the perpendicular aspect of your body and throughout the various vessels and so forth. All the organs, glands, and cells are dependent on that river functioning properly. This is why we focus on Hapi and Merit, and we are at the forefront of that process. Most people simply say Hapi is a river divinity, and that's the end of the story. But we know exactly who Hapi is. We know they don't even mention typically Merit at all because they don't know about her. We know exactly who she is, and we know how central they are to our lives. And we must incorporate them in all that we do. So this is what the Hapi Merit Retreat is about. February 16th weekend, that is a three-day weekend. Once again, we have a few spaces left if you would like to register. We have seven spaces left. Last we checked yesterday, we had seven spaces left. We may have gotten a couple of emails since then. We have to check that over the course of today. We haven't had a chance to go and check and see. But as of yesterday, we have seven spaces left. So if you would like to register, simply go to the site and make your deposit to reserve your space. Now, before we get on the phone lines and take a couple of questions, we have our Hapi Merit, we have our screening in Toronto, Canada on December 8th. We have some seats left for that film screening of our documentary film, Amarukapo Adibisa, African American Ancestral Divination. Go to the website, purchase your tickets while we still have some available. And also, for those who are not in Canada, won't be there, but if you would like to order the DVD of the newly released film, pre-ordering that DVD at the pre-order price of $15. It will be released soon. Go to the website now while we still have the pre-order price, and you'll see the link and you'll see the discounts as well to order the DVD. You can also purchase tickets for upcoming cities. We have a list of cities that we'll be visiting. We're confirming dates. We have some of the dates listed right there on the site. And we have other dates that say to be announced. We're confirming dates daily for these different cities coming up. We're going to have a number of dates in December. We have one of the dates in December that's already there, but we have a number of cities we will be visiting in December. Some of the weeks in December, we will have two or three cities that we will be visiting in the same week. For example, when we go to Houston and Dallas and Austin, we'll go to those three different cities within a weekend, like Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. The same thing with California. We'll go to like three or four different cities within the course of 3 or 4 days so we can reach, you know, as many people as possible in the state while we're in the state. So we're confirming dates for those places, including North Carolina, New Orleans, and South Carolina, and Florida, New Jersey, different places. Continue to check the site because you'll see when we confirm the dates. And as we said earlier, we make certain decisions about what city we will go to next based on the level of support. We have 10 or 15 people who have purchased tickets in, you know, Newark, New Jersey, and so forth. Then we'll schedule that as the next site, the next city coming up, because, you know, we'll be able to use those funds to rent out the venue. We're independent. So we rent out venues for 4 hours, you know, and then we go and screen the film, and we have a panel discussion. We usually have a, you know, vegan food vendor there as well. And then we go to the next city where we receive funds for tickets, and we go use those funds to rent out another venue, and we continue going that way until we get as many of our people beginning to, you know, see the film and comment on the film and so forth. This is independent. So we're going to go to the phone lines real quick. Had a couple of people on the phone lines. Okay, Nichelle, we're on the phone line, number 3558. Got a question or comment? Can you hear me on 3558?
No, he's giving you something.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cameron, don't eat it. Put it out.
Okay, we're going to try that again. We have one more call on the phone line. Number 0208 on the phone line. You had a question or a comment? Number 0208. I'm not sure. Maybe it might have been an issue with the phone line. I'm not 100% sure. But if it was, we just had two callers. So if you have any, for those who are on the phone line, if you couldn't get through, just simply send us an email about the question that you had, the question or a comment that you had, and, of course, we can address that. We are Kwesi Akan on Facebook, as well as Ojidako Akan on Facebook. You can also always reach us there. And we also have... you know, our regular website, of course, ojidafo.com. So go to the Hati Meri page to register for the retreat. Go to the Amarukafo Adebisa page to purchase tickets for our upcoming screening or purchase tickets for or purchase the DVD at the discounted price, the pre-order discounted price. This will assist us in scheduling screening in various cities. We want to do the same thing in a similar fashion that our people did within a month. Our people had given $250 million to the Whites and the Offspring to see the Black Panther movie. Within a month, $250 million. What did our people receive in return? We talked about this in a broadcast. The white savior complex, integration, the promotion of bisexuality, homosexuality, and we predicted that, and now they are talking about exactly what we predicted. They said that even though they left the lesbian scene on the cutting room floor for the first film, and that so-called LGBT community became outraged because they left that scene out because the lesbian relationship was fully developed in the comic, even the black actress who was part of the lesbian scene said she was dismayed because that was left on the cutting room floor. Now they're acting like they're being forced to fully develop that quote-unquote relationship in the sequel, and therefore the Dura Milaje, the warrioresses that all the young black girls and everybody was excited about, when the sequel comes, they've made over $1 billion. When the sequel comes, everybody's going to be primed for it. And all of those young black girls and black people in general who are in love with the imagery, they're going to be subject to a mass brainwashing session where they're going to force this sexuality on our people. That was the purpose of the film, to get our people all riled up with imagery and then float that white savior complex, integration, the demonization of the revolutionary character. So they make Killmonger crazy individuals. So anytime you hear anybody talking about revolution, nation building, nationalism, nationism, and so forth, the first thing that you hear or think about is a crazed individual who they would say, well, he had a few good points, but he was crazy and so forth. Of course, this is a fictional character that they manufactured. The whole point was to demonize anybody talking about liberation, nation building, and people being independent as Afurakani people. It has worked to a certain extent by our people. When they hear the term revolution, the first thing our people think about is quote-unquote Killmonger and how destructive in many ways he was. And they associate that with anything revolutionary, so they don't want to have anything to do with it. So that worked to a certain extent. And now they're going to promote the dissexuality and so forth. So our people spent over $1 billion within the first month, $250 million, and this is what they receive in return. Made white millionaires richer, made black millionaires richer, and this is what they received in return. Dealing with fictional characters. We are talking about our actual real ancestresses and ancestors who, through the power of hoodoo, juju, voodoo, wanga, and gangan, were empowered and guided to wage war against the whites and offspring to force the end of enslavement. They are people of our blood circles, our direct spirit genetic blood circles, who are actually the reason why we can walk around physically free today. We've done a movie or film about them and our ancestral religious practices, not fictional superheroes who are leading our people into white culture and self-destructive behavior. So we need the kind of support that our people gave to a film created by the whites and their offspring for our degeneration. We need the kind of support, and we need to show our community, the larger black community, that we can support people who are cultural, can support one of our own films. And even when they see cultural people supporting a cultural film, they themselves will say, well, maybe I need to look into this film. It shouldn't just be amongst people who know something about the culture. We need to reach all of our people. And dealing with ancestral traditions like hoodoo and juju and vodun and so forth, that touches all of our people, even if they believe they're not, quote-unquote, into that, because everyone has a grandmother, great-grandmother, grandfather, great-grandfather, aunt, uncle, and so forth, who was or still is involved in some aspect of hoodoo or juju or vodun or wanga and gengai and so forth. It touches all of our people. So we need that support. So if you've been following the work we're doing, we took a hiatus. We said we're not going to come back on the broadcast. We took a number of months off, so we're not coming back to do a broadcast until we can come back to the community and showcase what we have built. We had a number of people, in fact, 166 people over the course of 19 months who contributed to the crowdfund for our film. And because of those 166 people who contributed over that 19-month period, we were able to produce the film, traveling to Georgia, traveling to Florida, traveling to New Orleans, traveling to Ohio, traveling to Virginia and so forth, to connect with the different sisters and get their stories and so forth, and pull this information together to produce this film. Because of that work, we wanted to make sure we completed that work and then came before the community. The next time we came before the community to showcase the fact that we completed the film, and now it is out, just as we said, and it's screening and people are loving the film everywhere we've gone, whether it was D.C. or Philadelphia or Atlanta or Connecticut or wherever we have shown the film, everyone has loved the film. So if you can do so today, please support this effort. It's simply $15 for the DVD, $15 for a ticket for an upcoming screening. And when you purchase the $15 ticket for any upcoming screening, that $15 ticket, that receipt, is your ticket of entry. When you have the receipt, whether you print it out or you show it on your phone, you can use that receipt to go to any film screening in any city that you desire. So if you purchase the $15 ticket now, and we didn't have a date yet for North Carolina, but then we put the date for North Carolina in a couple of weeks, you can use it for North Carolina. Or if you decided, you know what, I'm not going to go to the one in North Carolina, I'm going to go to the one in Virginia, you can use that receipt for any screening you desire. If you decided you wanted to fly out to California because you were going to visit there anyway, you can use that receipt for a screening in California. As soon as you make the purchase, that receipt is good for any screening anywhere around the country. So that is a way that, you know, those pre-order tickets, it allows us, as we said previously, to go to a venue, purchase the space, and, you know, set up the travel arrangements and go out and showcase this film to our people, children as well as adults. The children love the film just like the adults do. So those are the two things we wanted to get into. I think Bisa Ancestral Divination, the film, also Hapi Merit, our retreat. And we did numerous broadcasts on the nature of the deities, Hapi and Merit, and their ramifications and so forth. So you can listen to those broadcasts. You can see the Hapi Merit page. You can see the trailer for the retreat as well as the trailer for the film. And we also have one other piece that we mentioned earlier on the website. For those who are familiar, we relaunched our Black Swan Life movement. When you look on our page for Black Swan Life, is dealing with, before, and in fact, I just want to, I'll read it to you directly from our website so you can get the full import of it without a paraphrase. You'll see the imagery. These are T-shirts for the Upright Tidy Woman, as well as women, as well as young women, and so forth. There's a quote, and what you see is a black swan, and you also see Amesa Nefertari, the great ancestress, and you see some Medusa, some hieroglyphic writing on a body of water, and it says black swan life, and in fact, that's what the Medusa spell out. The quote, which is on the back of the shirt, says there is an intrinsic elegance manifest in the Afro-Haitian African black woman with a slender physique that others do not have. One would not suggest that a swan needs to have quote-unquote neck implants to be beautiful. They are intrinsically beautiful by virtue of the fact that they manifest a slender, elegant form. The intrinsic elegance of the black swan has no comparison. The measure of her value is inherent in her nature. This is what's on the back of the shirt, the quote that was born of a conversation we were having with a sister. You see many of our people spending money, risking their lives to get implants, embracing a foolish Eurocentric notion of beauty, believing that their natural Afro-Haitian form, female form, is not good enough. So they're getting implants, chest implants, butt injections, risking their lives. Are people even dying because of this nonsense? We need to represent the divinity of our identity. So we have the black swan. Of course, you see a black swan. It's elegant. It's beautiful. Our upright Haiti women are black swans. They don't need artificial enhancements and so forth. They can operate according to who they are. We show Amesa Nefertari, the jet black queen mother, Temat Nsoro, wife of the god Amen, high priestess and so forth, great ancestress who was worshipped in Kemet for hundreds of years through ancestral worship and is still today evoked still today, richly for those who are aware. Her sacred image is there, connected, adjacent to the black swan itself. We have the Sankofa symbol over the sacred body of water, Epo Abena, the great mother of the oceans and so forth, that same ocean that we were forced to cross, but that same ocean that has sustained us, and then the Medusa, the hieroglyphs that spell out that peace. We are raising funds to print out the first 200 shirts. This is a movement, Black Swan Life, representing the divinity of our identity, seeing that image, seeing Afro-Haitian women wearing that symbol and learning about the philosophical foundation of the intrinsic beauty of the Afro-Haitian woman transforms the mindsets of our women, but also our girls. We no longer seek to engage in self-destructive practices to alter our looks, whether it's injections or things with, you know, makeup and lip injections and all these different things that totally distort our features to try to make us look more appealing to a Eurocentric mindset, even if that Eurocentric mindset is operating within the minds of our own males in our community. When our people take hold of who they are, embrace their intrinsic beauty, and as we've talked about, beauty, nefert, is not a quality. Nefert, or beauty, is a deity. Nefert is a title of Heru, the divinity of beauty, and so forth. So, this is what the movement is about. And when people begin to see our sisters walking around in the black swan-like T-shirts, a picture is worth a thousand words. When you see those images, you can't unsee an image. So when you see the sacred image of Amesa Nefertari, the great black ancestress, and you see the black swan, you see the Sankofa symbol, you see the body of Epo Abena, the great mother of the ocean and so forth, the divinity of the ocean, and the sacred Medusa, the hieroglyphs and so forth, you can't unsee that. Our people fall asleep. They dream about these images. They impact them. And when those images are implanted in the consciousness, it's a gateway, an opening for the insurmountable, the ancestresses and ancestors to begin to impact the mind of that individual because it cracks open their mind. It breaks through that coma that they were dwelling in and floating in and snaps them out of it. Gives a window of opportunity for our ancestors and ancestors, the Nananom Unsamapo, to get to the mind of our people and transform them. and we stop being self-destructive, we begin to be productive. We don't engage in self-hate. We manifest what is natural, the law or love of order. So when you see that, you'll see the webpage, you see the Black Swan Life movement. We did a fundraiser, crowdfund. We started it on November 6th because that was the anniversary of the movement. We just got an email today. We didn't even realize it, but we got an email today from the crowdfund site. And the email said you have 7 days before your crowdfund is over. We only did it for 30 days because we wanted to raise enough funds in 30 days to print out 200 t-shirts. And if we could print out 200 t-shirts and distribute them, then people would see them and they would begin to just purchase this, you know, the shirts regular. So we got an email today saying, your 30 days is almost up. We only have 7 days left. And we've been so focused on the film and, you know, the screenings and going out of town and doing these screenings that we hadn't put as much focus on the Black Swan Life movement. So what it is you go to the crowdfund page, you can make a purchase the contribution for one t-shirt or two t-shirts or three t-shirts. It's up to you, whatever you want. The t-shirt is like $25 or whatever. You make that contribution. Once we print out the shirts, of course, we will ship you your shirts, but that will assist us in printing out the first 200. We're working with a black printer. You have to have a certain number of shirts ordered first before they do a print run. They don't just print one or two shirts. We want to use a black printer, but we have to print a certain number before we can, you know, in bulk, before we can go to the printer and place an order. So we wanted to purchase the first, you know, raise the funds for the first 200 shirts, distribute those, and then they would just be on our website for sale regular, and eventually we'll have tank tops, we'll have, you know, sweatshirts and everything else for children as well as adults. But this is part of that movement to transform the minds of our people. When we transform the minds of our people, that leads to and ties into Amanie Nationism, the purification of nationalism. We understand who we are. We have self-love because we understand the nature of who we are. We understand our descent. We understand our ancestry. We understand the abosom of our matri clans and patri clans, what our energy configuration is, what we're naturally inclined towards. While we're children of a watery divinity, we have natural inclinations. If we're children of a fiery divinity, we have natural inclinations and a certain temperament. We know why we have a certain kind of phenotype. We know why we have a certain kind of personality, and it's born of the divinities that govern us. When you understand that people manifest certain characteristics because of the deities, the goddess or the god that governs them, there's no such thing as self-hate. You understand that you're divinely fashioned. You have a deity dwelling in the head region, the Ka, the Kayat, a divinity that guides you. So there's no self-hate in that. You know you're a central part of creation within the great divine body of the supreme being as an Akurakani, Akurakani person. Black Swan Life as a movement grounds us in that reality. When you understand that divinity of our identity, you can't seek to harm one another. Sisters won't seek to harm other sisters. Brothers won't seek to harm sisters or anybody in the community because we're developing that self-awareness, and self-love is an automatic manifestation of true self-awareness. So please go to the site. We only have 7 days left for this crowdfund campaign. Over the past 30 days, we started on November 6th, but again, as we said, we weren't as focused on that. So we want to get up so we can get those first 200 shirts printed out. A number of people ordering two or three shirts and so forth, that'll get us to that number so we can get those first shirts out so our people can begin to walk around and showcase this imagery. And when you see the imagery and you look at the video and the trailer and so forth, you will understand. When you see the trailer on the website, you see the movement of the black swan swimming in the waters and so forth, and you see the imagery, and then you study on the website, and we did a broadcast where we detailed every image. We talked about the true story of Ahmes Nefertari, the great queen mother and so forth, and high priestess Neji Gamet. We talked about the Sankofa Adinkra symbol. We talked about Efo Abenau. We talked about the black swan and so forth. We talked about the Medutu, the hieroglyphs that are on the shirt and what they actually mean. So we did a broadcast detailing that. People will not only wear the shirt, but they will also be able to share that broadcast with anybody who ask them about the church, including their children. They can learn about their truths to read their culture and so forth. So please go to that site. We have a few days left. Make a contribution for one or more shirts, and we look forward to shipping those out to you, and we can launch this movement the way it needs to be launched. So we're going to end the broadcast here. Yerase, we thank you for tuning into our first broadcast of our year 13,019. If you have any questions or comments, simply email us, connect with us on Facebook, Quakesy.com, or our regular website, ojidafo.com, and so forth. And again, Yerase, we thank you for tuning into the broadcast. And Yebeshia Bio, we will meet again. That's it.